This is 1988 Tops, where every card has a story to tell. Your hosts are David McKellis and Matt Kuzma. Let's play ball. Welcome back to 1988 Tops. David, what's our card for this week?
Our card this week is card number 749, Mark Eichhorn, pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays.
All right, Mark Eichhorn. And why are we talking about Mark today?
We got a note from friend of the pod, Tim Briggs, at Tim Briggs here on social medias, and he sent a video that is a 16-minute video all about Mark Eichhorn.
Great. Let's play that now in its entirety.
And then we'll call it a day. We'll link to this video that is MLB's slowest pitcher was completely unhittable by Look It's Baseball. This video has 1.9 million views, so I expect 1.9 million listens to this episode about Mark Eichhorn. Mark Eichhorn was one of the most unlikely all-time great rookies. He went from almost out of baseball to the best reliever in baseball, and one of the best relievers in history. He had a great career, most remembered for his time with the Toronto Blue Jays. And thank you to Tim Sitar, who had a great Sabre bio of Mark Eichhorn.
Fantastic. Let's go to the front of 749. We have a very emotional-looking card here, David. We have Mark Eichhorn in deep contemplation. I'm not sure if he's contemplating his own mortality, perhaps the beginning of the mullet he's growing, but he's looking downward. This is not an action shot in any way. This is very much an internal monologue shot. It's a very strange baseball card.
This is the cover for his very contemplative 1970s folk rock album, Mark Eichhorn, Reflections on Baseball.
You had mentioned Harry Nilsson. So this is the Eichhorn Schmilkhorn.
We'll get into pronunciations in a little bit. But this card, I have a distinct memory of getting Mark Eichhorn cards and being unhappy about it. I think that he has, particularly this card, he has a very generic look about him. And the Blue Jays in the 1988 top set, they had the MVP with George Bell. You had Jimmy Key. You had cool guys like Lloyd Mosby. And then you pull this card and you're like, ah, even Mark Eichhorn is disappointed in this card. Look at him. Mark Eichhorn, I think, has a very cool name. This is different from Lois Einhorn, who had no connection with Ray Finkel. Eichhorn is part of the reason that word is part of the reason why I picked this card this week. I've been slowly trying to teach my child German, and Eichhorn is a German last name. And the German translation of this could be someone who lived on or near an oak-covered promontory, or the other meaning is a squirrel. So the German word for squirrel is, let's see if I can get this right, Eichhörnchen. There is a famous video of Germans attempting to say the English word squirrel, which is one of my favorite things of the history of the internet.
Squirrel.
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 Squirrel. Squirrel. Say it.
Squirrel.
It's a squirrel.
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 It's a squirrel.
Moment.
Okay.
Come on!
At the end of this video clip, there is a clip from Top Gear where they suggested that a way to find a German spy was to have them say squirrel. In 2012, this was a matter that needed to be addressed by NBC News. Squirrel is a difficult word for Germans to say. I think there's not a lot of SQ sounds, and then also the RL, they combine it together. So just, it's very funny. But Eichhörnchen, that's also a mouthful.
Squirrel. Squirrel. Eichhörnchen. Eichhörnchen.
Mark kind of looks like a little bit of a squirrely guy here, or does he look like a guy who lives on top of an oak-covered promontory?
Looks a little squirrely here. I think generic's the right word. Generic mustache, not really distinguishable in length.
If he kept growing that 5 o'clock shadow out, maybe then he could go live on an oak-covered promontory, be a mountain man.
Yeah. He could, or could be the groundskeeper for the promontory. It is a very nice hat. Just the dynamism of the Blue Jay and the Canadian maple leaf on it. Love that hat.
They did Mark a disservice because there is something very distinctive about him. and that was his pitching style. If they had given him an action shot, I would have looked at this card and been like, whoa, what's this? What's this sidearm guy? I would have been a Mark Eichhorn fan. Instead, we just have a generic guy looking sad.
Very sad. Let's go to the back of 749, and we have Mark Eichhorn, pitcher, 6'3", 200, right-handed thrower and batter, drafted by the Blue Jays in the second round of 1979. Born November 21st, 1960 in San Jose, California, with a home in Watsonville, California.
We learned the way to San Jose in the Carney Lansford episode. Mark's father, Bob, and mother, Rita, started their family in Santa Cruz County, about an hour south of San Jose in Watsonville. Bob had been in the 101st Airborne in World War II and then worked for the U.S. Postal Service. Rita had a long career as a nurse. The land that Watsonville sat on was initially inhabited by the Ohlone tribe. Spanish settlers arrived in 1769, and the area was part of Mexico until the 1840s. The town was laid out in 1852, named for John H. Watson. No connection with Sherlock Holmes at all that I could find. John Watson helped plan and incorporate the town. The railway came in the early 1900s, connecting Watsonville to San Francisco. In 1930, there was a race riot in Watsonville where white residents attacked Filipino-American farm workers. That riot lasted 5 days. Violence spread to other cities, and this actually led to a law in California, which outlawed marriage between white and Filipino Californians. In 2023, county officials issued a formal apology for this shameful part of local history. But this was a huge deal, as Filipino-American farm workers were growing in population in the area. By the time Mark was born in 1960, Watsonville had 13,000 people, now over 52,000. Other famous Watsonvillians: Marv Marinovich, who was a football player, strength training coach, and was called one of history's worst sports fathers for the tactics that he used to turn his son Todd into a quarterback. Charlene Pryor, who was one of the fastest base runners in the All-American Girls Professional League. She stole 510 bases in 7 seasons. She passed away in 1999 at the age of 77. Also, Ken Sears, who in 1954 was the first basketball player on the cover of the recently departed Sports Illustrated magazine. He would go on to play in 2 NBA All-Star games and passed away in 2017. In youth baseball, Mark was a great shortstop, and he was also used as a pitcher. But in high school, to play every day, the coaches made him pick one position, so he became the team's star shortstop. He kept up his pitching chops by throwing in summer leagues and occasionally, as a senior, he would get a chance on the mound. He was also an honorable mention all-county basketball player and was a 6'3 point guard. As a senior, Mark caught the attention of scouts who were at a game to watch the opposing pitcher, Steve Rain. Mark had been good, but wasn't necessarily on their radar. But in this game, he was going up against Rain, who would be a second-round pick out of North Salinas High School in 1978, and then later a first-round pick in 1980. Rain would end up in the Royals system for a few years and passed away in 2019. In this game, Eichhorn and Rain are pitching against one another. Both of them are pitching great. The game ends 1-0 to North Salinas, so Mark only gave up one run, but he also got 3 hits to go along with that great pitching performance. On the year, Mark hit .369 and had a .39 ERA and was named All-County Baseball.
Even with that great ERA, Mark was not selected in the regular 1978 draft, so he enrolled at Cabrillo College. Then in January of 1979, Toronto selected Eichhorn as a shortstop in the second round of the January draft, right after Atlanta picked Uncle Milty, Milt Thompson. But he didn't sign. He decided to play shortstop for Cabrillo and did not pitch that spring. Then in June, he got a call from the Blue Jays scouts, who told him to come to his old high school to throw in the bullpen. He brought his high school catcher along and a bat, just in case. Within a few hours, he had signed with the Blue Jays and was sent to Medicine Hat, Alberta for rookie ball.
The name Medicine Hat is an English interpretation of Samus, the Blackfoot word for the eagle tail feather headdress worn by the medicine man in the area. From 1978 to 2002, the Medicine Hat Blue Jays were a Toronto affiliate. Eichhorn still thought that he was a shortstop, so he would take infield practice and was convinced that he was as good as the team shortstop Fred Manrique. He also took batting practice, telling the coaches, "I can hit." they never put him in as a shortstop. They just kept him as a pitcher. He was effective as a starter in rookie ball, and the next year in A ball, he went a combined 21-16 with ERAs of 3.39 and 2.9. And he also realized around this time that maybe shortstop was not in his future when his teammate was Tony Fernandez, and he saw Tony Fernandez's skill with the glove and the bat. Mark realized, I'll stick to the mound. In 1981, he was at AA. His ERA was around 4. He went 10-14, got promoted to AAA. And his stats aren't too impressive, 10-11 with a 4.5 ERA, whip over 1.5. But the Blue Jays at this time, their fourth starter was Jim Gott, and he missed some time with a blister, so they looked at AAA. And if you look at the AAA team stats, Mark was the most effective starter available, even though he was mediocre that year. And so he got called up to the big leagues at 21 years old.
Yeah, you can look at the back of the card and we see all of these minor league lines before and after this call-up. He gets his chance at the big leagues in 1982. Unfortunately for Mark, he had some arm pain. He knew something was wrong, but didn't say anything. He got his first start on August 30th against the Orioles, giving up 5 in 4 2/3 innings. He made 7 starts that season, including a homecoming against Oakland in the Bay Area. He gave up 3 runs in 2 innings before getting pulled. Nice scene that day. There was a large group of family and friends there to cheer him on. They gave him a standing ovation as he left the game. That must have been nice. He had a couple good performances that year, including taking a perfect game into the 7th inning against the Mariners, a game the Jays would end up losing in the 9th inning. Overall, not a great year, 0-3 with a 5.45 ERA, but it's his first shot in the show. Mark was the 8th youngest player in the American League in 1982. And then from there, David, we have a few years in the minor leagues.
On his baseball reference page, you just have a double black line between 1982 and 1986. And on the back of this card, we have a bunch of minor league stats, everywhere from AA and AAA the next couple seasons. He went 0-5 with a ERA near 8 at AAA. 1984, his ERA was near 6 in 36 games, spent some time in the bullpen. His shoulder hurt. He wasn't throwing the ball well. He'd lost velocity, and he thought about quitting. He was ready to go into coaching, and then his pitching coach, Larry Hardy, called him at the team hotel one morning and said, "Come outside. Outside, there's a catcher and a bucket full of baseballs." Mark had been a shortstop, so Hardy said, "You're used to using different arm angles." They had seen the recent success of Dan Quisenberry, and they told him, "Try to throw it like Q." So Mark said he tried it. He didn't feel any pain in his arm. And that night, he faced 3 batters, got all of them to ground out. He said he didn't know the last time that he got 3 batters in a row out. So this helped his confidence, and it also gave him a second chance at baseball. The Blue Jays liked what they saw enough, but they also wanted Mark to go to the instructional league to get some practice in the offseason. At this point, Mark's in his mid-20s, but he agrees, "Give me some extra practice." And we can go to the video that Tim Briggs sent and maybe look at some of his pitches just to describe this pitching style, because it's really strange, even compared to other sidearm pitchers.
Yeah, look at this video. There's something very relaxed about it as he comes out of his kick, where the release is completely disguised. You cannot tell until he turns all the way around where the ball is going to come from. So in the different clips, you see it at 1.75. One time it's released almost from his waist. It's very hard to tell as the batter.
And he is leaning to the right. So his whole body weight is going to the right. The ball is getting released from as far as his wingspan will reach on the right-hand side. So if you're a right-handed batter, where he's releasing the ball from could be behind you, could be even with your body. It looks like it's going to be coming right at you. Really a confusing set of circumstances for a right-handed batter particularly. It also carries his weight off the mound. The way that he ends his pitch, it looks like he's almost in a ready position because he's fallen off the mound. So as long as the ball is moving to the right-hand side, he's good. With this newfound release point, this new motion, he was better in 1985. And in 1986, the Blue Jays gave him a shot at spring training. He said he was the last guy on the roster, but he didn't allow a run. At this point, he's throwing some of the slowest pitches in baseball, a changeup, a fastball, slider, and his out pitch was a split-finger pitch. all of them released from a very low angle. His changeup sometimes moved like a knuckleball, and his slider moved all over the zone. So he had a lot of movement on his pitches. They were coming from weird angles. And righties, in particular, had a lot of trouble against him because that ball appeared to come from behind them. Nothing in his previous stats, though, even in the minor leagues, prepares us for the next line on the card, one of the greatest relief pitching seasons in history in 1986.
This 1986 season started inauspiciously as opening day he came on in relief in the fifth inning. He gave up a home run and the Blue Jays lost, but then he didn't give up another earned run in the month of April. And by mid-June, he was 6-3 with four saves and a 1.07 ERA in 58 innings. He was the setup man for the Terminator Tom Henke. And that makes this Blue Jays bullpen just a nightmare to face with these two guys in a row. Eichhorn said his pitches being so slow must make Henke's stuff look like he's throwing 120 miles an hour.
Unfortunately for Mark, he missed a couple weeks in June, which may have led to him missing out on a shot at the ERA title, but he returned as good as ever after just a few weeks out. Batters were normally used to arguing about how hard a pitcher throws, who's the hardest thrower. Instead, they were saying they have never seen a major league pitcher throw as slow as Mark Eichhorn. The Blue Jays were over 500, but never really in close contention that season, and as the year went on, reporters started looking at Mark's ERA and doing the math about the ERA title. Not normally a thing that a reliever is eligible for, because you need to throw a lot of innings, but through August, Mark had a 1.73 ERA in 130 innings. The Blue Jays at that point had played 132 games, so he was just two innings off the qualifying pace of one inning per team game played. Mark was self-conscious of this attention, and he didn't want the attention. He kept up his great performances, and heading into the final stretch of the season, he was just a few innings short of the 162 that he would need to qualify. Manager Jimmy Williams gave him a chance to start a game. Maybe in one of those final games, he could throw five innings. Even if he gave up some runs, he would still be significantly ahead of the competition. He just needed to qualify for the innings. Eichhorn said no. He said it felt selfish to do that. Even though the team was out of it and it would have meant a big personal victory for him, it wasn't that important to him. On the year, he finished with a 14-6 record, 166 strikeouts, a whip of 0.955, and a league-leading, in my opinion, 1.72 ERA. That's a 2.46 ERA plus. But he only threw 157 innings, so by five innings, he didn't qualify for the ERA title. It went to Roger Clemens with a 2.48 ERA. So if Eichhorn had pitched five innings and given up, 15 runs, he probably still would have won. Righties were just flummoxed by Mark Eichhorn. They hit 135. They had a 351 OPS, just complete dominance. Lefties were much better, but overall, batters only hit 192 and had a 288 slugging percentage against him.
An incredible season. Mark did receive a couple of Cy Young votes, but Roger Clemens was the unanimous first place choice. And while he didn't qualify for the ERA title, he still qualified for Rookie of the Year because he had only pitched 38 innings in 1982, the first year that he was in the big leagues. He finished third in Rookie of the Year voting behind Jose Canseco and Wally Joyner. According to Baseball Reference, he was valued at 7.3 WAR, which was third best among American League pitchers and fifth best among all players in the league. So you'd think that maybe Rookie of the Year would have been a better choice. And he was second behind Roger Clemens in base out runs saved, which takes the situation into the account, looks at the expected runs in every situation, and the change in run expectancy. So this is getting out of a jam, runners on base, and preventing runs from being scored. Among relievers, he was first in wins, innings, WAR, and fourth in games pitched, and was named the Sports News Rookie Pitcher of the Year.
He followed that up with a very good 1987. He led the American League with a career-high 89 games pitched. His usage was limited, sort of limited. Nowadays, seeing a relief pitcher throw 127 innings, that's a starter's number of innings. So he threw only 127 innings that year, struck out 96, so his strikeouts were down a little bit, and he had a 3.17 ERA, still very good, a 143 ERA+. He was solid down the stretch, but the Blue Jays couldn't hold on to win the American League East. He signs a one-year deal prior to 1988, which I think is kind of surprising, considering just how good he was those last two seasons, that he wasn't given a long-term contract. But he signed a one-year deal, and then in 1988, the Blue Jays are under 500 at the All-Star break in sixth place. Eichhorn had an ERA over 4. The Blue Jays sent him and David Wells to AAA. They wanted to try to shake things up on the pitching staff. The team improved in the second half, going 45-29, winning 87 games and finishing 2 games behind the Red Sox, but in fourth place. Eichhorn was called back after a dominant 18 games at AAA, and he finished the year with the Blue Jays.
Prior to the start of 1989, he was assigned to AAA, and Atlanta purchased his contract. He started at Richmond and had a 1.32 ERA with 19 saves, then got called up to the Braves, 45 games with the Braves. He was underwhelming and was released in the offseason. I think batters started to figure him out a little bit. He signed a deal with the Angels in the offseason of 1990, working with pitching coach Marcel Lachman on his splitter, and this revived his career. He saved 13 games in 1990 and had a 3.08 ERA. And then in 1991, he was almost as effective as in 1986, but in half the innings. He was still tough on righties, allowing only a 185 average, keeping the ball down, gave up only 2 home runs on the season, a 1.98 ERA, and a 208 ERA plus, which was an excellent season for an Angels team that was about 500.
Mark continued that effective performance through July of 1992. In 42 games with the Angels, he had a 2.38 ERA. The Angels were well out of contention, 16 games out. Just before the trade deadline, the team is on a flight. Interim manager John Wathen tells Mark he's got to talk to Whitey Herzog. At this point, Whitey Herzog is in charge of player personnel. So Mark gets up from his card game, and he goes, and Whitey tells him, "You're traded." Comes back to the card game. His teammates say, "Where are you going? Where are you going?" You know, it's right around the deadline. They know that teams are on the lookout. They guess every team except the place that he was going, back to Toronto. He was traded for a guy who we previously forgot was Canadian, Rob Ducey, and catcher Greg Myers. Both of those guys would go on to have long playing careers. Myers played a few seasons for the Angels. Ducey only played 31 games before heading to Texas the next year, but both those guys had 15-year careers in the big leagues. Eichhorn was excited to go back to Toronto, which he called his favorite city. He loved the people there. He said everyone treated him well, and he was going to a winner.
Yeah, this Blue Jays team had Jack Morris, Jimmy Key, Juan Guzman in the rotation, and a lineup with Roberto Alomar, Joe Carter, John Olerud, and Dave Winfield. Mark also praised manager Cito Gaston, saying he was soft-spoken, and when he did speak, you listened. The players wanted to win for each other, for Toronto, and they wanted to win for him. This Blue Jays team had the best record in the American League when Mark arrived, and they kept it going, finishing with 96 wins, winning the AL East. Eichhorn contributed right away. He was solid in that last month of the season. In 9 games he appeared, he gave up 4 earned runs, and the Jays went 7-2 in those games.
Those 4 runs that he gave up weren't consequential in any way to any of those losses. So even though he gave up a few runs, they weren't really important runs to give up. He was pretty solid for the Blue Jays at the end of the year. And going into the playoffs against Oakland, Mark was really underused in this playoff series and generally in the playoffs in both appearances in 92 and 93. He pitched in 1 game in the ALCS, appearing in the 9th inning of Game 5, which was a 6-2 loss to the A's. But the Blue Jays won the ALCS in 6 games to face Atlanta in the World Series, and again, Mark appeared in 1 game, another loss. He pitched a scoreless 8th inning in a 7-2 Game 5 loss. The Blue Jays ended up using 7 pitchers in their 11-inning Game 6 victory, and Mark wasn't one of them. He had just pitched the game before, so he wasn't on the list. Maybe if they had gotten to the 12th inning, he might have been called in. Blue Jays win. He still gets a ring, even though he only pitched in losses, and he got to participate in the parade, which he called a career highlight. Interviewed afterwards, he said, "It really hasn't sunk in yet. The reaction is unbelievable. There had to be 500,000 people. This is a big day for Canada."
And the Jays followed it up with another great season. Mark started out covering multiple innings. Over the first 2 months of the season, he threw 38 innings in 21 games. Opponents hitting a little bit better off of him than in years past. 286. He had a 3.72 ERA. Respectable, but not his best. From June on, though, his ERA improved quite a bit. He held opponents to a 1.59 ERA, throwing 34 innings over 33 games. Overall for the year, his ERA plus was 160. He was the 12th most valuable player on the Blue Jays at 1.6 WAR, which is very good for a reliever. He kept the ball in the park, only allowing 3 home runs, and he kept the ball down with the highest ground ball percentage of his career, 59%. Back-to-back years, the Blue Jays are in the playoffs.
And once again, Mark is used sparingly. Pitched in Game 3 of the ALCS against the White Sox. This is one of the two games that the White Sox won in that series. Mark pitched 2 scoreless innings. In the World Series, he pitched to 3 batters in a Game 2 loss to the Phillies. So in 4 playoff appearances, all of them were losses, and he didn't give up a run in any of those 4 appearances. He got 1 out and allowed 2 base runners, but neither of them scored in that World Series appearance. Toronto won again in 6 games, and Mark only pitched in a loss. He said that Cito Gaston had forgotten that he even pitched in the World Series. When he bumped into Cito Gaston later in his career, he said, "I regret not getting you into that second series." So for Mark, it was memorable to pitch in the World Series, but for Cito Gaston,
not so memorable. Mark did call it a special team, though, to be a part of, even if he wasn't used all that often in the playoffs. After 1993, he was a free agent and signed with the Baltimore Orioles. He was great in 1994 for the 43 games he played, going 6-5 with a 2.15 ERA. The Orioles were in second place in the American League East when the strike happened. This might have been a playoff team, or at least in the inaugural wild card hunt of 1994, but it wasn't to be. Prior to the 1995 season, Mark had rotator cuff surgery, rehabbed all year. 1996, he had some tryouts and signed with Anaheim, appearing in 24 games and an ERA over 5. And that's the last line on his baseball reference page for the majors. He was 35 years old, so I'm guessing he's done?
Nope. He spent some time in 1997 coaching, doing some clinics, briefly was in Taiwan. And we have a note about this from friend of the show, Andrew, formerly known as @PaintedCap. And he said that Mark played for the Fala Thunder Gods in the Taiwan Major League, which was a competitor to the CPBL. And Mark had a rough time there. He was homesick. He said that the facilities and travel arrangements were bad. They had to get ready in their hotel room. They couldn't shower before games. It just a really unfortunate experience for him in this first season in Taiwan. Also, he played 3 games. And in the 3rd game, a line drive hit him in the face so hard that the ball landed in the outfield.
Oh, man.
Afterwards, Mark had headaches. To go along with the homesickness and all of the other experiences, he just decided it's time to go home. And he went back to the U.S., but he still thought he had something left. He signed with Tampa Bay, and he said, "If I don't have anything left, I'll be happy to bow out." He was good at AAA. 5-3, 3.88 ERA, 18 saves. He didn't get a call-up. And after the season, tendonitis told him, maybe you should hang it up. But he didn't. Tried out for the Dodgers in 1999. And in 2000, he ends up getting signed by the Blue Jays and going to the minor leagues. All the way down in A-ball at Dunedin. And then got called up to AAA Syracuse. He had a 0.83 ERA in 22 appearances. And he thought maybe he could be a September call-up. But as he thought more about it, he said, he's been there, he's done that. His wife was pregnant with their 5th kid, so there's already kids at home, and he just decided it would be too tough to be away, and so he decided to step away from the game.
At age 39, with the 5th kid on the way, it seems like it wouldn't be that hard a decision, but closing the book on Mark Eichhorn, 19 seasons in baseball, 11 of them in the major leagues, pitched in 563 games, a record of 48 wins and 43 losses, with 32 saves, striking out 640 batters in 885 innings. His career ERA was 3.00, which was a 142 ERA plus. He had 2 World Series rings. How about retirement?
Mark and his wife, Marianne, had those 5 children. four sons and a daughter. His son Kevin was drafted by the Diamondbacks and pitched seven seasons in the minors. Daughter Sarah was a college swimmer at Azusa Pacific and now coaches high school swimming. And sons Steven and David also played at Cabrillo College, where their father and uncle, also named Dave, played. That elder Dave, Mark's brother, had played seven seasons in the minor leagues, topping out at AAA with Houston and the Dodgers organizations. Mark coached his kids' Little League teams, and in 2002, the Aptos Little League team featuring Kevin Eichhorn went to the Little League World Series. They were featured in the documentary Small Ball. And Mark was also an assistant coach at Aptos High School while his kids were there, and he still provides private coaching lessons for local players. In 2000, he was elected to the Watsonville High School Hall of Fame.
A high honor. Well, David, we started this episode with a baseball card that looked like the album cover of a very sad emo band. But now we've found a guy who really made a big impact on the Blue Jays, if not in the playoffs for them, and had a very long career. So what should we think?
Mark Eichhorn is still a Blue Jays fan favorite. He attends fan events. He is well remembered for that distinctive style and for that one dominant season, his best year that just didn't quite line up with the peak Blue Jays. But he was back with the Blue Jays at their peak and was able to win titles with the team. And that team had helped make him and had given him faith and kept him in baseball when he probably could have retired. That 1986 season was not only great for the year, not only great for the 80s, but for all time. By Baseball Reference War, it is the third best relief season ever, behind Goose Gossage in 1975 and Toronto native John Hiller in 1973. But Eichhorn was a different kind of reliever than those guys. He wasn't a closer. Back in the 70s, Goose Gossage was pitching seven innings in relief. He was getting multiple three-inning saves. Hiller was the same way. But Eichhorn was a setup man. But he also had a lot of multiple inning outings, more than Gossage and Hiller did in their seasons. He pitched three-plus innings 26 times in 1986. So perhaps he was a little bit overused, which could have led to some of the effectiveness declining as his career went on. But for that one strange, unexpected rookie season, he had the best WAR of any rookie pitcher since 1980. And since expansion, only the great Mark Fidrich had a more valuable rookie season. And still, Mark turned down a chance at personal accolades, turned down a chance at the ERA title, and this is still the greatest season ever for a Blue Jays reliever. So he was a humble guy, but also had just a fantastic year. And in 2021, Bluebird Banter put together a list of the 60 greatest all-time Blue Jays. Mark Eichhorn was number 38. That's pretty unexpected for a setup man. But not only was that first season outstanding, he had very good years in 1987 and 1993. But sandwiched in the middle of those, the Blue Jays gave up on him, he refound his form, and returned to the Blue Jays to triumph in the World Series. He had a really good career. Among pitchers with fewer than 10 career starts, he's 23rd in career WAR. And every pitcher ahead of him had more than 100 saves. That list includes All-Star closers, Hall of Famers, Tom Henke, Dan Quisenberry, Kent Tekulve. And then you have this slow-throwing side-armer whose career should have been over, had 32 career saves, and nobody ever really tried to make him a closer, just an incredibly effective setup man. And I found a Sportsnet.ca article that talked about the strangest individual Blue Jays seasons in history. They gave Mark's 1986 an honorable, with a U, mention in the biggest one-hit wonder category. But in their write-up, they make a statement that is offensive to me and my family. They say, in a way, Eichhorn is like Carly Rae Jepsen. The 1986 season is his Call Me Maybe, but technically there were a few other hits after that. This is a sad statement. It's from 2020, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt here that he didn't know that Psychedelic Switch was going to come out in 2023. He, you know, wasn't paying attention to emotion and the many great hits that Carly Rae Jepsen has put out. She has some jams. He should have given some more respect to CRJ. But this writer is correct that Mark is like Carly Rae Jepsen because he had that one big hit, but then he stuck around and was surprisingly good for much longer than anybody expected. He had three seasons with an ERA plus over 200, After that rookie season, he had three other seasons that were valued at 2.5 WAR. Really good for a relief pitcher. I'm just happy that in the same episode, I get to talk about German saying squirrel, emo album covers, and Carly Rae Jepsen. This is why this podcast exists.
I just really admire that he stuck with the game after hitting a dead end a couple different times from injuries and poor performance, and really having the courage to seek teaching and training to try to get better, change his release point, change his mechanics, and try to find a way to come back. And then even at 38, 39, and 40 years old, thinking he can try to give it one more shot and that he has something to offer, and doing that at some level, it's very admirable. So a great story and a great looking card in its own way. So thank you, David, for that. And thank you to you at home. If you're a German spy, we'd love to hear from you on Facebook. Find our Facebook page at 1988 Tops Podcast. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.